Welcome to the Smack Happy Design Videocast, where we explore all things web and marketing. With your hosts, Nicole and Danielle.
Welcome to the Smack Happy Videocast, episode number 5. Today we have Neil with us from Neil David Photography. He is an expert photographer, and we're going to talk to him about why he started his business in the first place and what it's like running a small business. So Neil, can you give us a quick little intro about who you are?
Yeah. Thanks, Nicole. And thanks, Danielle, for having me today. So my business is Neil David Photography. I focus on business marketing and portrait and lifestyle family photography. On the commercial side with the business marketing work, I'm typically telling stories or going behind the scenes with businesses. And on the lifestyle family side, I'm getting out there and rambling around in the park or the woods or taking a hike and doing storytelling for families.
Awesome. I'll go next. Hi, I'm Danielle. If you haven't met me before, I guess either via the video cast or episode or podcast. I think we're all calling it an episode now. I work for Smack Happy. I've been with Nicole and Smack Happy for about a year, and I do lots of cool things when it comes to marketing. And that's me in a nutshell.
And I'm Nicole Handasek, your other host or hostess. I own Smack Happy. I've had the company for about 10 years now, and I've been designing and coding websites for about 20 years. And we started this here, a little podcast, so we could get to know our clients, our referral partners, and fellow small business owners a little better, and hopefully share some insight.
Actually, Nicole, I want to tell you really quick. Yesterday, I don't know if you noticed, but on LinkedIn, it was your official 10-year anniversary with Smack Happy. So it's not about 10 years. It's officially 10 years. Probably longer because I can't figure out still how LinkedIn like kind of aggregates that, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
That's great.
Yeah. So in our last episode, what did we talk about?
Okay, so the last episode, episode 4, was about consistency in marketing and kind of consistency in general with our guest, Rachel Plass, a marketing expert. And one interesting thing I wanted to mention about this, if you're looking to go back and view or listen to this one, one of the things about the last discussion that was really cool was a lot of the things that we talked about all kind of tied in with branding, which is so funny because you would think it's kind of obvious, like, okay, branding and staying consistent in your marketing, you have to have a great brand at first, but sometimes it's not as obvious and sometimes it's not as clear where to start with that sort of thing. We kind of touched on that quite a bit. And you know, how starting there can really get you a good foot in the door when it comes to being consistent in marketing.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go ahead and dive into our discussion with Neil. So how did you get started in the photography business?
That's a great loaded question, huh? Like, how did we all get started? I'm glad you sent me a short outline of what we were going to be chatting about, because it was fun to actually think about that. Mm-hmm. I've been doing photography for about 7 years full time now. And I got started in that business, honestly, out of a need or a want to do something on my own. So I kind of followed, like, you know, like almost 30 years of following the logical path of college and job and then wanting a better job, going back to grad school. And I had studied environmental studies and sustainability, and I did a little stint of green building consulting for a large multinational architecture firm. And it was like this great big grandiose job, but it wasn't super fulfilling in the ways that I kind of thought I would be on that path of. So, after moving around with that company to a couple cities, they did get me to San Francisco as a city I always wanted to live in. And then I got the gift of being laid off about a year after kind of being rehired and moved here. And I didn't want a corporate job anymore. I was kind of done with having a job. I'm honestly not a great employee. And I really just always kind of wanted to leave my own way and do my own things. And I always kind of, I don't know, rebelled against the machine and all that stuff. But, I found a passion. I always had a passion for photography and I really just wanted to run with it. So I had dabbled in it a little bit part-time. And once I got the gift of being laid off, I was kind of like, well, let's throw all my eggs in this basket for a few months, see what happens. And it picked up steam and the rest is history, I guess they say.
So are you mostly self-taught with all of the, the functions of the camera and composition?
Yeah. From a technical standpoint, I'd say it's a healthy mix of like self-taught, dabbling, spending tons of time at a formidable age, like a kid, my camera, I was probably single digits in age the first time a camera was put in my hand. I was just in love with it. It's like the classic story of someone gives you a camera and you just love it. My parents always had family pictures of us and photo albums, and I was always fascinated with the still image, with photography. Always was fascinated. I was not good at painting or drawing or like other kind of artistic pursuits, but I loved photography. I loved composition and light and different, black and white and color. I loved what you could do with a camera. So I was always fascinated with it. So I spent a lot of time with it. I had friends who were into photography and we'd hang out together and learn. And then as I got older, I would take classes and continuing education kind of stuff. I didn't really take much classes in college or high school with it. And when I got older, I took a lot of continuing ed stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what are the top three things you'd need to know before getting started with photography if you were to inspire a budding photographer?
That's another great question, because to boil it down to three is so tough. As you guys know from running businesses, there's so many things that go into each day. But I think one of the number one things I would think about in that realm is that it's really not all fun in photos. It's great and it's fun and the photography is a part of it. But when it comes to running a full-time business, I'd say 80% of it is marketing, networking, hustling, schmoozing, working behind the scenes, doing the post-production, stuff like that. I mean, maybe 10 or 20% of a typical work week of mine is actually on a shoot at a location behind the camera, maybe 10 or 20%. So I think that's the number one thing is it's all fun and games until it becomes a business. And then that business part really kicks in.
Yeah. Isn't there some sort of saying if you really love to do something, not to do it as a career because you won't love it anymore?
Yeah. Yeah.
Shame.
I think
I kind of went through that with it too. I definitely did. I went through ups and downs. I was ready to toss my camera out the window and watch it shatter. You go through a lot with it, for sure. And I never considered myself an artiste, but I always kind of liked the mathematics of photography, I think. Not that I'm a math guy, but there was something there's a lot of geometry and physics. There's a lot of stuff with photography that was scientific that I really liked. And then the business stuff just kind of, that's another thing. I didn't study that much. I mean, a little bit, classes and stuff. I had some courses in business, but it was the real world where I really got my britches on there for sure. But yeah,
we actually talked a little bit about that exact same thing with Crystal in another episode. What was it? The harsh reality of running a business.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we talked about was the controversial MBA sort of thing. So a lot of people kind of go to, if I want to run a business, I need to go out and I need to get this. But while that's awesome and while education is very good, I don't disagree with being educated in a university or something like that. But you get that real experience when you're actually putting yourself into the business and doing the things the day-to-day things and figuring things out and making mistakes and learning from them and doing it that way. When it really comes full circle for this is how really this works. and maybe some people expect it to be the way it turns out, but I think most people are unexpected. or get that unexpected, you know, surprise of, oh, okay, this is how it really is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't have to go to school to be an expert or college.
Right.
These days, you know, like, we were talking before we got on, and, you know, we have children, right? and people watching this are going to have children, and I'm sure they're like, I have an 18-month-old. I'm just getting started on the parenting experience, with another one on the way in July. So I'm like, what am I for these two little guys? Do I care if they go to college? Like me, I went to college. I went back to school. I got a master's degree. It's hanging on the wall in the office. And it's a big fat payment I got to put out there every month, because I made some bad decisions with private loans and stuff like that. And it's ironically paying for that education with a totally different career. I completely pivoted into something completely different.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not saving for college for either of them. We're saving for whatever they want to do, you know, and it's not going to go into like a traditional college savings that they have to use for that. So I'm going to let them figure it out. Because, you know, I think it's good that I went. I'm glad I went to college and grad school even, because those life experiences you can't ever take back. You know, like I was almost 30 and I was like back at school full time with like a 20-hour week job. And it was like being in college again. It was rad. But I'm paying for it now, you know, but it was awesome. A good experience. And it brought me where we are, right? All our experiences bring us to where we are.
Yes.
I think that kind of brings up a good point too, that you shouldn't be afraid to pivot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if that wasn't right for you, then don't be afraid to, you know, turn around and try something different that will make you happier.
Right.
Yeah. Like what a weird decision, right? To like go and be working for like this 2000 employee, 20 offices all over the world, you know, having like international video chats like this. And it was, you know, consulting on airport design and commercial buildings and jails and, you know, all the other thing, hospitals and stuff. And now I'm like photographing those places that I used to kind of consult on, which is cool. But yeah, totally different experience for me. You know, I know people, you know, there's some people are like serial entrepreneurs and they just start businesses and sell them and all that stuff. I think that can get a little out of hand, but in terms of like really committing and putting your passion in and then realizing, hey man, I want to change gears now. It's not like generations ago where you had like 2-3 jobs your whole life. You know, it's like average person has at least 7, I think, if not, you know, more career changes in their lives now. So.
Yeah. I can be the first one to say I've had about 1 million jobs up until now. I hope it kind of like the trend goes down, you know, now that I'm with Smack Happy, I don't have to have, you know, 16, 17 more jobs or whatever, but. Yeah. I guess it's just the nature of how everything is now. Always trying to find something better or something more or something different. You know, and I think that I can relate to everything, you know, you guys are both saying, because it's like, you know, you really just want to do a lot of things that are going to be good for you and for your family and for your future and things like that. And it's hard to do that now, staying with one job or, you know, sticking with something that you're not, you know, your heart isn't in. You know, people get really super miserable when that happens after years of being in the same job anyway. So I don't think I'd have it any other way.
Yeah. Like back to kind of what you were saying about getting started in the business. Part of what I wanted was to own everything I did in a way. Like now it's like, I felt like I had no freedom. Like, I mean, like having a job's fine. Like I'm not knocking that at all. I think if you want to just have a job and do your thing, that is totally cool. Some people love to go to work, put that stuff away, come back home, spend time with their family. And part of what I think is stressful about having your own business is you're kind of always at work and you have to like turn it off or turn it on. And like, every decision you make is on your own. But I actually really, I thrive on that, you know, a lot. You know, my wife runs her own business as well. I do kind of like part-time with that as well, or almost half-time, kind of split my time with her business, Songbird Studios, which is teaching singing. So I'm doing business development there. And that's great too, because I'm like, it's her brainchild, it's her passion. She's the singer. But then I can look at it from the like, well, I want this business to really succeed and I can help it with a different lens. And then we own like literally everything we do with our decision making. So that part was really important to us. It's also like really scary and really challenging. And, you know, sometimes you're at work at 7 in the morning, sometimes you're at work at 10 at night, but you know, sometimes you're snowboarding on a Tuesday. So, you know, it's kind of, it's that different lifestyle. that I craved, which is part of why we got into running our own businesses.
So with Songbird Studios, you mostly help her with the business end of things, like processes and systems and...
Yeah. Yeah. My official title is co-owner and business partner. So my main role there is business development, and kind of higher level executive, decision making. So that, you know, my wife and I, Whitney and I, we live together, work together, you know, we're always together, you know, texting and like at the same time, like while we're like on three meetings. So it's, my role there is really helping out with that. And we have three studio locations now in San Francisco with almost 300 students and 17 part-time employees. So yeah, we just hired a couple. So that I'm kind of, yeah, loving doing that part of it because it's, my business is small. It's really me and a few assistants and some outsourced, like things like accounting and services like that, that I don't really enjoy and don't want to spend my time on. Bigger operation. Sorry, what was that?
As of who likes accounting?
Bookkeeper was one of the first things I outsourced. Like I was like, I'm not good with numbers. I hate spreadsheets, QuickBooks. I love the profit loss. Like I love looking at the all the data combined on one page. I love looking at that to make decisions.
Yeah.
So that's like for both businesses. I love doing that stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be the one crunching the numbers, and I don't want to be the one, you know, going through it. So yeah, I could say outsourcing is like for those getting out there is that what you can outsource is another like small fun fact we can throw into this discussion.
Yeah. And I don't want to throw the accountants under the bus. I'm just saying, I just like accounting. I've done it. One of my little side jobs, I love the place that I work, but actually doing when everything works out at the end, that's the best part of accounting, I think.
Yeah.
And doing other people's things is probably different than doing your own as well. So it's like, you know, you just kind of want to see the end result when it's your own business. Not a great use of your time, I guess, either, but, outsourcing the busy work, I guess. Right.
For sure. Yeah, totally. And I think as you grow, especially as a business, like, and this was sort of also, well, part of, you know, you were asking before, like, what are some of the things you want to know before getting started with photography or just any business? Honestly, I feel like kind of knowing where you want to go with it is a really important thing because like some people like going to like having 85 locations and 2,000 employees and all like that may not be for you, you know, and that's not necessarily a marker of success. You know, and just because you have all that stuff doesn't mean you're even making more money or happier, you know, because more money, more problems, the bigger your infrastructure, the more expenses there are and all that stuff. So I think it's important. I think it's important to outsource, but it's also important to know, like, how big do you want to grow? You know, you could do just as much with a 5 or 10 person company as you could with like 100 person with way less headaches and way less problems. Like my wife and I, we own 100% of our businesses. We borrow a little bit of money, like lines of credit, a few $1,000 here and there, but you know, we own everything and every ounce, every dollar, we don't owe anybody anything. It's all us. So that was really important to us. Awesome. But some people aren't scared of loans. Some people aren't scared of debt and they borrow millions of dollars. You know, that wasn't for us.
I think to your point about success, I think, you know, you define what your success is, right? And, you know, one of the things, like, we've both worked with Coach Crystal, and, like, one of the things you do is you say, okay, like, where do you want to be? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah.
And then you kind of backtrack and, like, figure out all of the steps you need to take to get there. And, you know, that picture, that is your success, whether that, you know, means making more money or having 85 locations, whatever it is, right? For you to decide, and you shouldn't do that, you know, comparing yourself to others thing that, like, I have a friend who does this, and you're just miserable because you're never there, right? You're never satisfied.
Yeah.
If you're constantly,
it's hard not to do. You really have to, if you're one of those people that gravitates towards, you know, comparing anything, you know, whether you're comparing a situation to a situation or, you know, a personal thing to another person, it's hard. You have to kind of force yourself to be like, okay, I can't do this because they're not me. They're not, it's not my life. You know, it's very different. I have trouble with that, too. I mean, you know, it's hard to stay positive in such a crazy world sometimes. And I think that, you know, it just depends on, you know, who you surround yourself with. And, you know, Neil, you said, you know, you work with your wife, I'm sure it's great. And, you know, you guys can kind of lift each other up in that way. And,
yeah.
You know, so anyway, just thinking about that. I was going to ask, one of the questions that we had written down was, who are your influences? So I'm thinking about this, like people who inspire you, people who can lift you up, people who kind of can keep you out of that, you know, oh, I'm doing bad. This is, you know, I'm comparing myself to this person, that sort of thing. So who are your influences for like photography or your business or anything like that?
Yeah, that's also a good question in that when I started out, I was like, I must have watched like 8 hours a day of Creative Live, which is like an online learning platform for mostly creative work. It started out with like photography and videography and stuff. And pretty much anyone who was on that was someone I would be influenced by. And there were a few people who I really ended up liking their work, like Zach Arias and Joe McNally. And so they're somewhat well-known commercial photographers, and some kind of people who are like them. And I studied what they did, and I learned from their courses, and I practiced what they wanted to do. And I feel like my goal was to like learn just enough of the technical and their style so that I could kind of be influenced by it. But I stopped short of like recreating anything, because one of the most important things in photography, and this is really hard these days when like everyone's got a camera, everyone's a photographer, digital cameras are getting really good. But you can't change the person and the passion and the creativity and the like technical stuff. Like you can learn that, but you can't, like you have to really hone your like passion for it and your creativity and your ability to kind of think on the fly. So I knew getting started that I was like smart enough to know that's what was going to carry me in the professional photography world. Your expertise is like, it's just assumed, right? It's like, I'm hiring you for this awesome picture, or like you guys, like I'm hiring you for an awesome website. It's assumed I'm going to get an awesome website, but what's the experience going to be like working with this person, and what like extra little bit of tidbit are they going to put on that cake that I'm going to really want to, you know, take a bite of it? So
yeah,
that, I think people who inspired me to learn stuff like that, those were, you know, those were the people I really paid attention to.
Yeah. I think that we've found in our business too, that there's, I guess in the most basic way I can say it, there has to be, you know, like you said, some sort of experience, some sort of connection that you find with anybody that you hire. And, you know, I mean, everyone can say they have the experience, and maybe most of the people do, but do you have, you know, can you walk the walk? Can you talk the talk, like that sort of thing? And then, you know, going to someone who's just kind of, or a business who's sort of more transactional, even if they do have the experience, it's like, why would you want to do that versus working with someone who actually cares, who actually wants to put their passion into it, who has done and seen so many things that they want to share with you, you know, and try to improve the experience, that sort of thing. So yeah, I hear you on that. I definitely would rather go, I mean, for me, anyone, photographer, someone that I can kind of relate to more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I don't know if we finished the top three list back then. We kind of went into discussion after
that. Hey, we can go back.
I was thinking about it because it sort of is a good, like what we were talking about now. And like the other two things I was thinking of were like knowing your craft is really important. Mm-hmm. You know, just knowing like, in a day where almost everyone's a photographer and Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat and all that stuff, not that all that's like at a professional level, but yeah. You know, everyone like digital imagery is so ubiquitous and cameras are everywhere. And granted, there's a big difference between the camera on my, you know, let's date this thing, my iPhone 10, you know, when people are watching this 5 or 10 years from now, whatever iPhone's out at that point. The camera's amazing and the portrait feature on it is super rad. I have some really cute pictures of my kid with it. And I'm blown away by, you know, and you always see professional photographers who'll do like a YouTube short on like, you know, this iPhone versus this $30,000 Hasselblad camera. And like in terms of looking at it on a small screen, yeah, those pictures are great. But if you want to like blow them up or do a campaign, they break down really fast. Yeah. So, you know, knowing your craft is really important. It takes mad skill to compete in today's world of getting paid for things that are just assumed to be free or like 4 cents on some stock photography website.
Yeah.
You know, digital imagery is ubiquitous and it's really like, it's hard to get paid for that. So
yeah, we kind of have a similar problem. Our arch nemesis is those websites like Wix and Squarespace and Weebly.
Plug and play stuff.
You know, why come and work with us when you can go and, you know, build your own free little website?
Yeah.
And the difference for both of us, I think, is the experience, right? Like,
yeah,
we know what we're doing, you know what you're doing, and in the end, you're going to have like an amazing product or service that's just going to blow those other self-serve things out of the water.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. A lot of that's popping up in the photography world too. Like I got into using drones for photography last year. And you know, got my commercial license from the FAA and all that stuff. And there's a process to doing it legally commercially. And a lot of people out there, they may not be doing that. You know, they might be sort of illegally creating stuff and not really knowing the rules. And
yeah,
you know, for me, like a big, like the aerial section on my website is like, it talks a lot about our credentials and experience and it shows images that I've done, you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, and there's tons of websites out there now. And like, for some reason it's sexy, like, and it's exciting, the aerial drone stuff. So like, anyone that can spend $1,000 on a drone now is like a photographer, like an aerial photographer, which you know, some of them are. Some of them are great right out of the box. But you know what's kind of set us aside and me aside in particular, I felt like, is that I have like, well, I'm 39 now. So 39, yeah, and for 35 of them, I've probably been using a camera. So I have like all this lifetime of experience and now I'm putting it in a camera in the air. Whereas some folks are just like, they may be a great drone operator, but they're not necessarily a photographer. So it's really, and the line for most people, even clients at a high level, the line between like good enough and super professional, sometimes is very small, but the perception is there, I think, on the client side with certain businesses enough that, you know, we're still getting work. So
yeah,
but it's hard. It's getting harder and harder, and I guarantee I'm getting undercut left and right because I'm not willing to just bend and break for, there's a website out there, you can get a $300 shoot for all this stuff where I'm like, I'd be putting another zero on that. And I'm just like, how are they producing this work for that little money? And there's a whole thing, especially in the drone world, about how undercutting and all that, because it's such a brand new industry. And I'm hoping that settles out, and I'm seeing it a little bit with the commercial work and the family work that I'm doing. Cause there's a lot of people out there, you know, they're competing with a lot of people and that's, yeah, it's saturated. And I'm sure you guys see that with your business too.
Definitely. I think
the market, you know, but it makes things harder for us.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. I was just thinking about though, now that we've called out the photographers who use the drones that may not go through the FAA process,
mm-hmm,
they're going to be sorely mistaken, I don't know, but they're going to be in trouble because the FAA, I know that either they fine you or they can take away your rights to even having that. You can get in trouble.
Yeah, you and your client.
I know. So...
And I think that's a really interesting point. You know, I forget, someone else told me that she was, she also does like video and photography, and she was taking the class to get the license. And I was just so fascinated, like, oh, I see, you know, it makes sense that you would need to know a lot more about that because you can get in trouble. Mm-hmm. Like you kind of briefly mentioned, you know, if you, maybe you're taking a photo of something that you shouldn't be, or it's copyrighted, or who knows, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind
of, I think, an individual, even like if an individual saw that you were taking photographs of them or something, like, and you know, they were just in the area or something, I mean, someone could go as far as taking a lawsuit on you. I mean, that's your business, you know, it's gone. Yeah.
A lot. Yeah. There, it really is. And like, there's the rules with things, you know, things that you're putting in the air, like quadcopters and stuff, they're very different than, I mean, like, all, there's so much gray area now. The rules are very different. You're in federal airspace. You're not really, you know, yeah. The only thing they can really regulate on the ground is where you take off and land. But once you're 1 millimeter above a blade of grass or that building, you're in federal airspace. The police, sheriff, they cannot control you. You can only be controlled by federal rules. So there's a huge misconception about that stuff. And that's not to go into too much detail there, but there's that's one of those things, like knowing your craft, knowing the industry. Like, I went barreling into the aerial stuff and I was studying and I got my license and all that stuff. And I was like, and then I started really learning about what it's like on the ground. And I was like, man, there's a lot to do. And I sort of backed off a little bit. And I'm like, I'm taking a more slow, kind of calculated learning process and, you know, taking things slow with it. Because especially in a populated area like we are in San Francisco Bay Area, the rules are really complicated. And you look at an FAA sectional chart of airspace for this bay, it's insane, the rules. And then, you know, can't fly over people and within distances of certain things and all that. There's a lot to learn. So that goes back to kind of like knowing your craft and knowing the rules and knowing like what you're doing before you go putting something in the air or going on to property you're not supposed to be on, whether it's, you know, ground operations or in the air.
Sure.
No. Yeah. And that's for any business. Know your rules, regulations, hire a lawyer.
I wish we had an FAA for when things like that happen with websites.
Yeah.
Because I think we'd be totally in the clear and a lot of people wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And rightfully so, but yeah, just throwing that out there too. Okay. Did you name all the three things that you wanted to name? I mean, I know it was hard to dwindle it down to three, but.
Well, yeah, we talked about not all fun and photos, knowing your craft. I guess the other one would be kind of knowing what you want to focus on. You know, because at first you'll be doing whatever comes your way to make a buck, you know, and then eventually you'll need some specialties that you'll be known for. So, and there's a caveat to that. In my case, which is that I sort of have two arms of my business where I have the commercial side and then I have the family and portrait side, which is kind of the more like retail almost side of photography where it's like direct to clients. I'm selling digital files and prints and artwork to everyday people. And then there's the commercial side, which is totally different in terms of conversations, contracts, how the business goes, what the photos are going to be used for, their marketing businesses, their storytelling, their social media campaigns. And it's my business to business. So it's very businessy. And that's how I stay busy is that I have both arms of the business and depending on the year or whatever, I might be doing more shoots in one or the other. And I kind of have some industries I sort of focus in on the commercial side. And then I have a style, which is like a storytelling lifestyle thing that I've built my family photography business on. But in photography and any business, I think it's important to specialize, you know, unless you're like Amazon, you sell everything or Walmart or whatever. But like as a service, you want to get known for something. You want to be like the go-to guy who, you know, puts drones in the air and like crazy places, and or you want to be like the guy who's doing industrial photography for hard to reach places or something like that. So there has to be a little bit of that, otherwise you're not really seen as an expert.
Yeah. So if you were just starting out and say, you know, you weren't like, I don't know if you weren't exactly sure, but you had an idea of what you were, you know, going to do, is there sort of like a go-to camera that would be like a great, just like a grouping of equipment that you should always have to start out with when you're going to pursue something? Cause like, I mean, you know, there's differences obviously in taking pictures with drones versus, you know, taking family portraits versus, but you know, considering someone who's going into that, you know, maybe there's an investment part of it that you need to be ready to make. Like, what would you say to that?
Yeah, that's always a great question. And like, especially photographers tend to be like gearheads and like love gear and stuff like that. And I loved gear at first, and I like got all this stuff, and like I have like a closet full of stuff. I don't even use half of it now, because eventually I figured out like which tools do I really like. You know, it's probably like painters or like, you know, artists. You have like your giant set of pens, your pencils, and you probably only use like three because you really like, you tend to like have a style and you learn them, right? So for me, I've always been a Nikon guy. Like, I know people like to talk about their brand of gear, and it's really like Nikon, Canon, Sony are like some of the three top ones right now. Or if you have like $8,000 to spend on a camera, you can get like a Hasselblad or a Leica or something. But us regular guys, I use Nikons. It was the first camera that was put in my hand. It was a fully manual 35 millimeter film Nikon FM10, and it was not the first real camera, you know, after like point and shoots when I was a kid. But I just really love the way like Nikon cameras work, so I married the brand. That's kind of how you are as a photographer. You tend to like, I think it's, you know, with computers, it's like you just marry like whatever brand, and you get into it, and then you start building a kit. So I have, I use a Nikon D810, which is a pretty high megapixel camera. That D850 is my dream. It just came out. It's like the next generation, but you don't necessarily need, like, that's their professional line of camera, but you can get in it for, you know, much less investment than that on a camera, like a semi-professional camera. And then focusing on glass lenses is really important, because those outlast your cameras. So I always recommend, like, if you have, you know, you have whatever you can spend on a camera, don't go nuts. But if you can get to like the professional realm, that's great. The semi-pro stuff is great too. And definitely lenses, like, don't cheap out on lenses, especially because those will last way. Like, I'll have the lenses for decades. Cameras I'm replacing like every 3 years, maybe four tops.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about the cameras. Like, part of why like you started with Nikon and you stay with Nikon is because you get the lenses, and then they fit on all of the Nikons as you keep growing, right?
Yeah.
I ended up being a Canon girl, so I started with a Canon Digital Rebel and kind of moved up from there.
Yep.
I was trying to find something really quick. I don't know where it is, but I was gonna pull out some old digital camera that I had.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Like a Kodak digital camera. The first generation of the ones that have a little screen.
Yeah.
That's about as technical as I got. And
the first digital camera I ever used, it was this Sony. It was gigantic. It was like the size of a brick, and it took those like 1.4 megabyte or the discs.
Yeah.
The hard shell disc. And it probably shot like a 320 by like a 180 pixel digital image. You could fit like 10 or 15 of them on the so it was almost like using like that was the film. And I remember that was in college. That was that was the first digital camera I ever used. They had to check it out from like the tech department. And I remember I was in a landscape natural history class, and I was like taking like nature pictures with this disc camera. I should go to my computer and pull them up. It'd probably be hilarious. Yeah, digital photography's come a long way. There's like, you know, consumer level 40, 50 megapixel stuff, and there's, you know, 120 megapixel medium format cameras that are $20,000-$30,000 just for the camera, you know, never mind the back and then the lens and all that stuff. You could have a $300 setup, you could have a $300,000 setup, you know. So camera wise, I think, you know, whatever you can do. I mean, there's people out there making amazing artwork with iPhones and Samsung S8s or whatever, you know, and Google Pixels and stuff. So I think professionally, and not focusing on gear, I always go back to like focusing on the artwork and the passion and all that. And, you know, try out gear, go to swaps and meets and clubs and friends and just use stuff until you find what you like. Like, don't go ahead and rent it. You can rent a camera for like $100, which is, you know, a good amount of money, but at least it's better than buying it for $4,000, you know, and then not liking it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. I also use some flash and strobe work in some of my photography. So I use the Nikon speed lights, the smaller ones, off camera. And then I really like pro photo lighting. It's like really expensive high-end lighting, but I bring it on shoots. I rent it for shoots when I want to. So anything I don't own, I can rent, basically. So I don't use it that much. If I had like a 14 millimeter wide angle architecture lens, I don't do a ton of architectural work, but sometimes for an interior designer or as part of a storytelling project for a business, they might want some interior shots. So it's like a $25 lens, but I'll rent it for $30, you know, a few times a year. So I don't have to carry it in my bag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So I think we have one last question for you before we start wrapping up. What was the most memorable session you've ever done?
That's a cool question. I've had a few that are super memorable. Just fun stuff happens on shoots, and you know, you get really close with people too when they're like letting, like being, you know, in front of a camera is really intimidating, even for me. So you kind of get to bond with people. But I've really enjoyed some of the ones where I get out there into more abstract places, and there's some that can, like, some of my favorite shoots are on my website, in this top shot section. It's kind of like I have portfolios that are like one or two shots from my favorite sessions, but the top shots takes it to the next level where it's more of an inspirational portfolio and shows like what we did for a whole project for a business. But I signed an NDA on this one, so I can't really say the client name, but it's a well-known Bay Area shipping port. And we spent a few days climbing cranes and getting access to places that you would normally need high level security clearances for. And that was really memorable, like watching sunsets from like, you know, like, I don't know how many people get to go up to the top of the shipping crane in a port and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, that'd be awesome.
It was rad. And just telling stories of like, and shipping ports aren't necessarily like, they're cool and they're like majestic in their own way, but they're not necessarily known for being like beautiful places, like forests and mountains, you know, in Malaysia. So I was like, let me just make it beautiful. And that was really fun. So it was like a 3-day project, like with pre-production ahead of time and a ton of post-production for how things were shot. And I'm hoping to get back there with them at some point for a drone project. But yeah, that was one of my most memorable projects. Cause it was like, it's rare that I'm like on a photo shoot and I'm like almost terrified of like dying. There were like a couple times where it's like, this is pretty cool. And I'm like trying to GoPro myself. Cause I'm like, this is so cool. You know, I'm like making videos. There's actually a video on my Facebook page of me, like, and I, if you look at, if you know me well enough, you could tell I'm a little like, oh. Yeah.
I think that was how I felt. I, whenever I was in San Francisco, I stayed in a fourth floor condo, and there was sort of like a, you know, a fire escape, and the floor was just kind of, you know, metal grates sort of thing. And I've never seen anything like that before. So I was outside. I'm just like, okay. I tried taking a picture. I'm like, no, wait, what if I drop my phone? And all these things run through your head. But nevertheless, it was a really cool sight to see. So.
Yeah, totally. I know. I was worried about dropping my stuff and like.
Yeah.
Yes. And we had to crawl through these like little tube things. We were like passing packs and it was fun.
Sounds great. I'm not sure I could do that.
Yeah, it's a little less intense.
I like crave it now. I've done some really cool, I like the industrial, like I've gotten really into like really enjoying industrial photography. And I did a shoot for a recycling manufacturer. They take waste glass from recycling, like, you know, our recycling here in the Bay Area, and they process it into other products. So sort of a dirty facility just by, you know, definition, but making it looked beautiful and capturing the beauty of it, like the glass shattered and the machinery in certain ways, and the people that work there, that I love doing. That's one of my favorite things lately, is going into places that are thought of as like ugly or derelict or in this industrial park that no one really sees except the people that work there, and making it look beautiful or showing off the reality of what it is for how we live. So I like doing stuff like that. I really like storytelling. And the more I can marry my past career life of like the environmental work and the sustainability work and the, in that industry with my current work, the better. Cause then I feel like I haven't really turned my back on that. I'm still kind of working in that world too.
Yeah.
I think Pittsburgh would be a really great place for you to travel to do a shoot. With everything you just said, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm in Pittsburgh currently. That's where I live. I grew up here, and there's so much stuff like that in the city. And there's so much stuff that they're doing now too that has that same idea.
Yeah.
You know, making something into something else to kind of keep the history to it and, you know, create new things and new experiences and keep it, you know, sustainable for the city. That kind of stuff's really cool to see, especially I would say in the photography that you do, you know, the storytelling part of it is probably really one of the most important parts to, you know, the work that you put out there.
Yeah, I think so. I think if you're not telling a cohesive story, it's confusing and it doesn't make sense. You know, that's fine for like Instagram, like instant moments are cool to have like one image that tells, you know, a moment. But one of the biggest challenges with the work that I do is like telling a cohesive story and going in and like making it a full circle story and not just a bunch of random things. But that's, you know, people love to learn about the businesses that they patronize this day and age with in social media and with small business, you know, big small business comebacks and stuff like that. Like people love to know where the things they use every day come from.
Mm-hmm.
They love to, and I love to tell that story. That's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Neil. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your experience and your knowledge about photography.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a fun discussion with you too.
Yeah. Thanks. Can you tell us again what your two businesses are so our listeners can find you?
Yeah. The photography business is Neil David Photography. It's online at neildavid.com and it's spelled NILLDAVID. And again, I focus on commercial work with businesses, mostly telling stories for their marketing. And then I do lifestyle family photography. And the other business is Songbird Studios. And it's online at songbirdsf.com. And it's primarily a one-on-one vocal coaching business. And we have about 300 students right now, 3 locations in San Francisco. The new location is definitely looking for way more people to fill those seats there. We also do workshops for singing, songwriting, performance, and lots of other things there too.
Cool. I like to sing a little bit. I might be looking you guys up.
Yeah, come on in. We do a free intro lesson for anyone who wants to come try it out, come sing with one of our instructors. We have probably the best team of vocal coaches in the whole Bay Area for sure.
Awesome. Okay. And then next time, what are we talking about, Danielle?
Oh, we are going to be talking with the lovely guys of Verducci Event Productions. They are an event production company in San Francisco, and I think they're widely known for, you know, DJ services for wedding, corporate, you know, social events like birthdays, bat mitzvahs, that kind of stuff. And they're just like super awesome business owners all around, and I think we're just gonna kind of dig in a little bit. I don't know where the conversation's going to go at the moment, but you will know what it is next episode. Let's just put it
All right. Well, thank you for joining the Smack Happy Videocast, where we explore all things web and marketing.
Until next time. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Smack Happy Design Videocast. For more information and downloads, visit smackhappy.com/videocast, where you'll find more episodes and the opportunity to subscribe on YouTube or iTunes. You can also sign up for our newsletter delivered to your inbox monthly. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and colleagues. Again, that's smackhappy.com/videocast. See you next time.